couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about some new films: Wolfwalkers, Wander Darkly, Nomadland, Let Them All Talk, and Wild Mountain Time. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring last year's remake of Black Christmas. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is a follow-up to last week, and we talked about Warner Brothers making the decision that they're going to be releasing all of their movies, all 17 major movies, in 2021 in theaters and on their streaming service, HBO Max, on the same day. Now, that shook up the industry because I think that the theaters heard about it about the time I did, because they did not consult them beforehand. And, of course, AMC pushed back and complained. And a lot of people have also pushed back and complained. Notably, Christopher Nolan had lambasted the studio for it and called them the worst streaming service ever, which to me says he's never tried to watch something on Crackle. But I find it interesting that Nolan's the one batting back at Warner Brothers, because he's kind of part of the reason this is happening, because they lost money on Tenet because he would not allow an on-demand release. He wanted it to be exclusively in theaters, and they believed him. And they're like, oh, yes, it's going to bring it back because Christopher Nolan, you can do no wrong, and you're the panacea of filmmakers in this world. And it kind of flopped. And it's partly Christopher Nolan's fault for that. So he has no one to blame but himself. So there have been a couple other directors and actors and people complaining about it. But here's the reality. I think certainly Nolan is very much that cinematic experience guy. Honestly, I think if Nolan could release a movie in theaters and never sign the rights to home video, he would. He likes the theatrical experience that much. But you got to realize, even your biggest movies, even stuff like The Dark Knight or Inception or Dunkirk, all these movies, a great majority of people watch those on TV. And from this point forward, most people are going to be seeing any of your movies, Christopher Nolan, on a home video system. So you don't get to control how people watch everything everywhere. Now, the other people that are complaining, Patty Jenkins kind of made a comment, but hers, of course, is Wonder Woman, which we knew was going to be coming out day and date on HBO Max. But a couple other people have kind of grumbled about it. Legendary Pictures is grumbling about both Dune and Godzilla. And Denis Villeneuve, who directed Dune, is not happy about it. But here's the reality on some of these people. I don't think it's because of the theatrical experience that they're complaining. They're complaining because of royalties. It's impossible to say, for example, how many people are getting HBO Max because Wonder Woman is coming out on Christmas Day on HBO Max. It's impossible to say how any of these films are in fact impacting the bottom line. You can maybe judge by how many people watch it, but that's not public information as opposed to like grosses that come out from the theaters. And I think it has more to do with the fact that they just want to get paid. Follow the money. These people don't have a problem with their movies going to a streaming service as long as they get their fair share. And once they work that out, and I guarantee you the lawyers are working on that right now, they're going to be fine. James Gunn's going to be like, fine, put Suicide Squad on. I don't care as long as I get my paycheck. Because a lot of these people, especially name actors and directors, have a certain percentage of the box office gross. But if you just have the box office, that doesn't count money coming from the subscription service. So that's one of these behind the scenes rights issues that's going to have to be sorted out. Now, what's interesting about it is Disney also just had their release of all their new products that they're going to be coming out. And I mean, I can go on. I can tell you about all the different multiple Star Wars series and the multiple Marvel series. And they're doing Disney and animation and Pixar series. And they're also going to be coming out with movies that are both going to theaters and to Disney Plus. What's interesting is most of the movies that they announced this week at their Disney investors meeting, most of those have a release date of 2022 or later. They're your handful of ones that are already in the pipeline, like Black Widow, which comes out in May of 2021. But most of the movies that they're dealing with are in the future, and they're saying they're coming on this date, but they may say in theaters, but they're not saying exclusively in theaters. And I noticed that is something that they're being careful of saying. Like Patty Jenkins, who directed Wonder Woman 1984 and the original Wonder Woman, she's directing a new Star Wars movie called Rogue Squadron. And that's going to be the next live action Star Wars series. I don't know if that's going to come out both on the Disney Plus and in theaters. We'll have to see. We're going to have to see how theaters survive the pandemic and what other movies are available, because I do not think that the theater systems are going to be able to sustain the multiplex model with movies like the ones I'm going to be talking about this week, like Wild Mountain Time and Nomadland and Wander Darkly. You can enjoy those movies, but these are not the movies that would make the multiplex model work. And that's the thing that's in danger. I think Disney's going to start putting whatever's on their streaming service, and they've already announced certain movies like that Raya and the Dragon one is going in theaters and on Disney Plus, and they're doing a premium. They haven't told how much it's going to cost, but we'll see. Disney's still figuring out how much money they can charge without people not watching it. That's business. That's just how it runs. But you got to always follow the money on this sort of thing. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. I want to talk about a couple movies coming pretty quickly. The first one is We Can Be Heroes, which is coming out on Netflix on Christmas Day.
Missy Moreno?
Yes?
You'll need to come with us.
Welcome to Heroics Headquarters.
You will be staying in our underground stronghold.
As the children of superheroes, you are all in danger.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is unbelievable. Our heroes have been captured by alien intruders.
We want to rescue our parents and save the planet. We're going to need to do it now.
Time to be a hero.
This is directed by Robert Rodriguez, and it is it's a sort of a soft sequel to Shark Boy and Lava Girl, or The Adventures of Shark Boy and Lava Girl, which was, I think, 15 years ago. I do not think that Taylor Lautner's coming back as Shark Boy. Unfortunately, he's not going to be doing a song and dance number like he did in that movie, which is terrible. It reeks of Robert Rodriguez. It looks like Spy Kids 3. And his original Spy Kids was kind of cool, but as the more and more he got into the virtual sets, the more and more it kind of just looked as like a live-action cartoon, but not like a good classic cartoon like Looney Tunes. It looked like a cartoon that was sort of second tier off the Cartoon Network that maybe has this tiny little fan base on the internet, but nobody else cares about it. Not like Powerpuff Girls or Pinky and the Brain, but something bizarre and weird that nobody, you know, it's sort of like the Press Your Luck fan club. I mean, this looks like fine for little kids, but it looks like it's going to be much similar to the later Spy Kids movies and Shark Boy and Lava Girl. I just hope he didn't get a 10-year-old to help him write it like he's done in some of his other movies. The next one I want to hit is Nobody, which is in theaters on February 26th.
For 12 years, I worked for some very dangerous people. I used to be what they call an auditor. The last guy anyone wants to see at their door. But I left it behind to start a family.
Hey!
I might have overcorrected.
When you left, you abandoned a certain debt that needs repayment. And your creditor is the winner of your resurrection.
This stars Bob Odenkirk from Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad as a version of a John Wick type character where he's has this very violent past that he's put away and then he's dragged back in and has to go after revenge. This looks like it's going to be another type of a John Wick kind of movie, and I find those enjoyable. They're fun. I like Bob Odenkirk. So I'm looking forward to this one as just a throwaway actioner when it comes to theaters in February. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Let Them All Talk and Nomadland. And to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump off and talk about some movies. This one's actually not in theaters. It is on HBO Max. It's not in theaters at all. So it's not one of those day and date things. You got to remember, just because HBO Max has made a lot of news lately about sucking the air out of a theatrical release, they're still doing exclusive releases on their service. I've talked about them over this year. I remember talking about American Pickle. I remember talking about The Witches several weeks ago. This one is Let Them All Talk. It stars Meryl Streep as a celebrated writer who takes a cruise with old friends who were the thinly veiled subjects of her best-known book and must resolve their differences.
Alice has a manuscript that's due really soon. Everyone at the agency is getting a bit nervous. I mean, I haven't seen a manuscript. Have you seen the manuscript?
I have not seen a manuscript.
For years now, she's been hinting that she's revisiting one of her characters, so I've booked her on the Queen Mary 2 with her two friends and her nephew.
Here's to picking up the conversation where we left off.
You believe Alice and her book determined your whole life?
The consequences on my life of her actions were unacceptable.
This is directed by Steven Soderbergh, and I find that interesting because it's once again another major director who is happy to just go into the streaming service. I don't think this was ever meant to be a theatrical release. And if you remember last year around this time, Soderbergh directed The Laundromat, which also starred Meryl Streep in a much smaller role, but he worked with her before, and that was a Soderbergh movie on Netflix. And there's a lot of directors who have no problem going to a streaming service as long as they are getting their money. And that's why I said, like, you go back to that HBO Max delivery. I think everyone just wants to make sure that they get their paper in their pockets before the films go into obscurity. There are several versions of Soderbergh as a director. You know, there's the real punchy, cool Soderbergh, like the Ocean's 11. There's some pretty heavy duty stuff, stronger, very serious stuff like, something like Traffic. But then there's also this weird sort of character studies. And these are the ones that he never does well with. These are the movies that everyone's like, oh yeah, I guess he did that movie. I mean, this is sort of like Sex, Lies, and Videotape, which is where he got his start. But everyone remembers him for the more punchy stuff and the bigger budget stuff. This is essentially a character study, and it's about this woman who's, he said, a writer, and she goes on this cruise because her publisher wants to see her manuscript, and she hasn't shown her manuscript, and supposedly she's working on a sequel to this big book that she had, and so the publisher books this cruise with her and the subjects of her first big hit book, and they're sort of forced to be together because they're, on the ocean for a week or so. And I will say this. I'm a person who enjoys cruises. I've taken cruises. I've not been on the Queen Mary, which is where this takes place. But I've been on plenty of cruise ships in my life. And it's nice to see a movie that actually takes place on a cruise and looks like it's on a cruise ship. Because so many times you see movies and TV shows and they say it's on a cruise ship. And then you're like, oh, yeah, no, that stateroom's way too big, or that ballroom's different. There's a very specific look, the height of the ceilings and the length of the corridor and the way the rooms mold around each other. It's clear that they were on a cruise. And so I don't know, maybe just Soderbergh wanted to take a cruise and just invited some friends and they decided to make a movie along the way, which is possible. But this is not a movie for everybody. This is a movie about a bunch of people talking. It's about a bunch of older ladies who are trying to resolve their differences. And they've got some deep-seated resentment and issues. And then you have this publisher, this woman who works for the publisher, trying to see if she can see the manuscript and get whatever information she wants because her career is on the line because she's supposed to be delivering this book that this woman's writing. And she employs the help of Meryl Streep's nephew, I think, and he goes on the cruise with them, but they have a little bit of a potential relationship there. But the real reason to see this movie, for me, it wasn't interesting because it's not my kind of movie. It's a bunch of, older women trying to resolve their differences. But the reason to see this movie really is for the acting. You've got not just Meryl Streep, but Diane Wiest and Kenneth Bergen play these two women in her past. And it's just kind of fun to watch them together. It's nice to watch them interact with each other. If you like that cast, if you like the actors in this, you should like this movie just to watch. They can be talking about anything. But to watch them talk about this, I mean, Meryl Streep's character certainly has that pompous attitude that critically acclaimed authors have, where they look down on anything that's remotely mainstream. But it's a deconstruction of that. And just because she believes that and she says that doesn't mean that that's necessarily what Soderbergh's saying. Because Soderbergh certainly plays around in mainstream plenty of times himself, even if this movie is outside of the mainstream. So I guess really this is for somebody who wants to see these actresses act and would enjoy that. So I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt because I liked the actresses, even if I wasn't a huge fan of the story. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next movie, which is Nomadland. Frances McDormand stars as a woman who lives out of her van off the grid with friends in a nomadic community out west.
Hey, Bert.
Hey, Linda.
Come over and join us.
No, I'm just going to take a little walk.
Okay.
Be back soon.
You listen to that trailer, there's not much to it in terms of the trailer. It's very indicative of the movie, though. Similar to Let Them All Talk, Nomadland is not the kind of movie I'd call mainstream. This is a marginal art film featuring McDormand, who is at least doing an interesting service in spotlighting a real community in America. There are people who no longer have a house. And they're not homeless. They're houseless. And they say that in the movie. It's just that they live out of a van or they live out of like a Winnebago or a camper. And there are communities where they can live and park. And that way they don't have to deal with property tax or just the structures of having a home. And they live on their own and they go from place to place. And maybe they work seasonally. And her impetus that got her there was twofold. In her community, it was shut down basically because the factory left and everything dried up. Also, her husband died, so she's a widow. And she's struggling financially, as are a lot of the people in this sort of these caravan locations. And a lot of it just kind of shows by demonstration of what people do, what people go through. There's no dramatic arc necessarily. I mean, she's dealing with certain things. She's still dealing with the grief of her husband and the unresolved issues there, especially some unresolved issues with her family. And that does come up at a certain point. And there is a through line and an arc that goes up and down and it does have an ending, but this is more a spotlight on the community and the spotlight on the people. And it almost feels like a documentary, where you're watching how people are dealing with what the world throws at them, whether it's weather, whether it's temperature, whether it's damage to their vehicles that happen through nature or just wear and tear. It's an interesting spotlight on something, and it's something that clearly Frances McDormand cares about. And I think that that's good. It's a challenging movie in a little bit. I mean, it's not too long. It's like an hour and a half. So it doesn't drag, but like I said, it doesn't have this driving plot through it. There's no big, you know, James Bond action sequences in the middle of it. But still, I'm going to say it kind of rocks. If for anything, for Frances McDormand's performance and her charge to spotlight a real type of community in the U.S. So yeah, I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Wander Darkly and Wild Mountain Time. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on and talk a little bit about some movies that are out in theaters along with Nomadland. The first one is Wander Darkly. A woman and her boyfriend get in a car accident, and she finds herself reliving key moments in her life to contemplate her happiness.
You know, we both deserve to be happy. Are you happy?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, that's convincing. Why are we even together anymore?
We have a newborn baby. We just closed escrow. You want to split up?
I want to... What do you think happens when you die? What if it's some extension or manifestation of your fears? Somebody help me!
What's happening to me?
It's this time of year, you know? It's getting colder, there's snow out, Christmas season's coming out, holiday decorations are around. You know what that means? Depressing movies from Hollywood because it's award season. That means everybody's angling for an award. And everybody knows that award films all have to be dramatic and depressing. Not all of them are. Some of them are interesting, but they got to be hard-hitting and deal with real issues and all that kind of garbage. So we're getting a couple of these. This one's the Sienna Miller movie. And if there's anything I've learned about Sienna Miller is if she's going to be an award film, somebody's got to die in it. She was in Foxcatcher. She was the wife in Foxcatcher. She was the wife in American Sniper. So that seems to be a theme with her in these movies. So as I'm watching the movie, I'm like, oh, somebody's going to get killed. And then they get in this car crash. And I guess that's the big thing about what's happening to each person, because it all seems to be in her head, but she's communicating with her husband. And you don't know if their husband is if she's just seeing what she remembers of him, or if they're both ready to die, or if she's, conjuring, you don't know. That's the mystery about who's where and what is happening to them. And is this all in her head? Is this actually a spiritual experience? But the whole point of the movie is for her to go back and deconstruct her relationship. And of course, her boyfriend, who's played by Diego Luna, he shows up and interacts with her, beyond the understanding of what's going on in the scene. So he's like, this happened years ago, don't you remember? And then so they have a chance to, in a lot of times, talk about what happened and, look at what they remember, and is it accurate, and is the point of view accurate? And look, I mean, both Miller and Luna do fine jobs acting. I mean, and it's a well-made movie. It's in focus. And the acting's fine. I mean, they get behind their characters. My problem with this movie, and this is the way I am with so many movies, especially movies that are intense character studies. If I don't like the character, I don't like the movie, because that's what the movie is all about, is the character. And the movie is all about her character. And she's such a stuck-up, snobby, self-centered, self-righteous little butt. I can't get behind the movie. I'm going to sound really reductive and mean, but I mean, Sienna Miller is beautiful. She's gorgeous. And the character comes across exactly like you'd expect, a gorgeous woman who's always had things given to her in her life. I mean, can we agree that attractive people, all other things are the same? Somebody who's more attractive than somebody else has it easier. Especially women. Women who are attractive, they can get out of speeding tickets, they get stuff for free. That's been demonstrated again and again. And I mean, it happens to guys too, but I think it happens to women. And that's why when you're on Facebook friends with women in high school and you're in your 40s now and they just got pictures of their dogs and their kids and you can't find a picture of them anywhere, they got fat or ugly. They got wrinkles and they don't look like they did when they were 16 in high school. So this character of Sienna Miller, she's just a real not a nice person. Nothing's her fault, and she complains of this person. She doesn't. She's not selfless. It's all about it's me, 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 and she picks fights. I mean, it's almost like this is a real character that someone who got divorced from her wrote. So everything she did, I was annoyed with her. I was like, I don't see any part of what makes this guy love you aside from the fact that you're beautiful. And that's the problem with this movie. That's why, I mean, it's a neat idea and it has some interesting stuff going. And by the way, Diego Luna's character is no charming picnic either. He's kind of a jerk too. So I'm watching two people that I would have hated in high school have a horrible time in their afterlife. And I'm like, who cares? So that's my problem with this movie. I did not like it. So I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Wild Mountain Time. Two families with adjoining farms in the Irish countryside learn to get along with each other while the younger people fall in love.
Are you going to leave the farm to Anthony?
I don't see a clear path.
From where to where?
From me to you.
My cousin is coming.
Get off of the farm to an American.
Waiting for that one.
What are you waiting for?
Me, I don't wait.
I do like that.
You should come to New York sometime.
Anthony will
never marry.
If it comes to that, I'll freeze my eggs.
You should freeze your whole body if you're waiting for that one.
This is written and directed by John Patrick Shanley, who is best known for doing stuff like Moonstruck, and he wrote Doubt. I mean, he's a very revered writer and a very well-known both a playwright and a director and a screenwriter. And I've seen a lot of his stuff, at least some of the movies, and I think he's got a good handle. And it's an okay story. I mean, there's a certain Irish charm to the whole thing. You've got Jamie Dornan and Emily Blunt, and they play essentially the kids. I mean, they're adults now, but they're the kids who grew up in these adjoining farms. And they've always had a thing for each other, and they've always loved each other, but it's never been stated or acted upon in all their years. And Jamie Dornan's father, played by Christopher Walken, he knows he's coming to the end of his life, and the question is, are you going to leave the farm to your son or someone else? Because he's kind of dragging his feet on that. He considers selling it to an American cousin, played by John Hamm. And then, of course, John Hamm comes over, and he's that charming American guy. It's twofold. On one hand, it's this love story between these two people who never admit it and are too proud to admit any sort of feeling to each other because that would offer some sort of vulnerability to them. But it's also about these two families trying to resolve their issues over the years. And like I said, there's certain charminess to it, and it's beautifully shot. I mean, it's gorgeous. I believe it's shot in Ireland. It looks fantastic. My biggest problem with this movie is, oh my God, just nothing happens. And it's almost aggressively at times not letting anything happen. And I know that's kind of part of a love story. You want to keep them apart for a certain amount. But finally, when they get in the room and talk about it, you can't make that a 30-minute scene. I mean, it just kept going on and on and on and on and on. And they were just arguing about whether or not they could even talk about possibly having feelings for each other. And I was just like, oh my God, is this movie ever going to end? The other thing that's interesting about this movie is apparently in Ireland right now, it is getting a lot of ridicule for its Irish accents. You hear a little bit of it in the trailer. Christopher Walken, who has a very distinct voice, but he's from New York. And so it's him doing an Irish brogue. But here's the thing. Christopher Walken has spent his entire career playing Christopher Walken. Even when he's doing animated movies, he's still Christopher Walken. Think of it as somebody doing a poor impression of Christopher Walken and then trying to work an Irish brogue into it. That's about what you get. I mean, there's a lot of people who have a very distinct voice. You know, like, could you imagine Jack Nicholson trying to do an Irish accent effectively through an entire film? That would not work well. So that's a small problem. To me, it's almost entertaining to watch Christopher Walken struggle to act, and he's really giving it all. And I love him in this, but he's missing the mark in many ways. Still, he does a fine acting job as long as you're not hearing him talk. But you know, overall, I mean, the movie has some great stuff, but if it just moved faster and it got to the point way quicker, it would have been better, but then it would have been like a movie would have been 40 minutes long. It's padding. There's a lot of padding in this movie. And maybe that's just the Irish way of doing it, because, you know, out in the Irish countryside, they don't do anything quickly. So I'm going to say still that I wasn't a wild fan about this one, so I'm going to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Wolfwalkers and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Black Christmas.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into our final film review, and that is Wolfwalkers. In feudal Ireland, the daughter of an English guard befriends a girl in the forest who turns into a wolf at night.
You can come out now. You're a wolf walker. I met a girl in the forest who has magic powers. When she sleeps, she turns into a wolf. She's a wolf walker. Something's happened to me. Be a wolf!
First of all, this is available on Apple TV now. It's actually been doing a limited theatrical run for the past several weeks, like 2 or 3 weeks, since about Thanksgiving. But Wolfwalkers is an animated film, and it's done by the same people who did The Secret of the Kells and The Song of the Sea. So they come from a great pedigree. They have this Irish animation studio, and they make their animation look like wood carvings. So it's very stylized. It's, you know, the characters are, you know, they kind of have these exaggerated curves to them, and it looks like, you know, like old Irish wood carvings. And in that sense, it's just beautifully animated. Even though it can be simple sometimes, it's just a beautiful style of animation, and it's gorgeous to watch. And it's unlike anything else that you've seen. I mean, except for, you know, Secret of the Kells and The Song of the Sea, which I think both of those were nominated for Oscars in the animated film category. Look for this one to be as well. This is a beautiful film, and it's been a while since I've been putting a lot of animated films on my best of the year list, just because there have been a little bit of a sloughing off in terms of mainstream animation, but this is going to go on there, I guarantee you. This is such a beautifully done movie. It's this really tender story about this girl, and it takes place during the British occupation of Ireland. Now, you know, people don't, you know, most people in the mainstream don't realize this, but the Irish were essentially invaded by the English, and the English, you know, as they've kind of invaded a lot of places around the world and had a colonialism, you know, it wasn't very far for them to go to the Emerald Isle, but they got over there, and a lot of the pagans and a lot of the older generations were suppressed. And that's really the genesis to where the fighting goes on between Northern Ireland, you know, a lot of the Northern Irish problems that are going on that can be traced back to the invasion of the British. And this is the British occupying and colonizing this one area and building basically a fort. And they have these walls on the fort, but of course there's wolves out in the forest, and the guards want to get rid of the wolves because the wolves are problems for livestock, and it's a safety issue. And this girl finds these shapeshifters, and turns out that there's this tribe of wolf walkers, these people who turn to and from wolves. And, you know, it's steeped in Irish history and Irish folklore, but it's also still the story of a girl realizing that she's in a world that's much bigger than she thinks it is initially. And she's trying to get her father, who works for the English guard, to believe her. But of course, that's against the ruling of the English, who are occupying the land. And so it deals with these issues, and it's interesting to watch, especially from an American perspective, because, I mean, it deals with real Irish issues of occupation and the British. But for Americans, we don't have that ingrained into our history. So sure, you can make an allegory to Native Americans in this country and their treatment by the European settlers. But, you know, they don't draw those lines for you because it's an Irish movie. But it should allow you to at least see a bigger picture of culture clashes and what happens, and, you know, how some people can be oppressed and how bad things can end up happening in the past that, you know, you can't change but may not have been very, you know, righteous, so to speak. But it's just a beautifully done movie, and it's wonderfully animated. And it's the next in line. I mean, I love Laika as a production company, and I love Cartoon Saloon, which is the company that does this. It's a wonderful movie. I absolutely say check it out. If you can still find it in theaters around, but it is now available on Apple TV. It's absolutely worth checking out. I say totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Conner. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's home cinema spotlight is going to go on an older release, and that is Black Christmas, which came out last year. Came out in 2019 on Friday the 13th in December.
Helena hasn't gotten home yet.
If I were missing, I'd want you to unleash the bloodhounds and track me down.
She was at DKO last night.
Still creating problems, huh, Rye?
I'm worried that something bad happened.
It's winter break. Could just be a delay of some sort. Snow.
My friend is missing.
9 times out of 10, the girl's just with a boyfriend.
I will bring you to your knees.
I never got a chance to watch it. Usually at this time of year, I'm just so busy, swamped with award films and screeners and stuff, that sometimes I really kind of have to pick and choose my movies that I watch. And so I didn't see this one. But I've always been curious about it because I love the original Black Christmas, the Bob Clark movie that takes place in 1974, literally one of the first slasher movies that have ever been made. Technically, you could say Psycho was 14 years before that, but Black Christmas feels more like a modern slasher movie. Well, modern, you know, when you put in quotes, I mean, modern being the 70s and 80s, because then it was followed eventually by Halloween 4 years ago and then Friday the 13th 2 years later. So it sort of helped kind of kick that off. And then they remade it back in, I think, 2006. And that thing was garbage. That was a hot mess of a movie. It was meant to be a continuation of it. But honestly, I watched it again a couple years ago. I couldn't make heads or tails of that movie. It was incoherent. And there's one thing to say we need violence in this to make this an R-rated movie. It's another thing to make the violence so incomprehensible you don't know what's going on. I mean, it was just violence for violence sake, and not even in the sort of the whimsical, silly way that slasher movies did in the 80s. But that the remake of Black Christmas was just god-awful. This one is a remake in name only because it doesn't follow the same story. The closest it has is it's in a sorority house on campus at Christmas. And young, pretty girls are being targeted. And that's it. I mean, the whole back, this is more a remake of The Skulls from the 90s. This is the kind of movie, it really doesn't hold up as a slasher movie. I mean, yeah, I guess so, because you got people in danger, but the movie itself is not a bona fide slasher film. It's more an invasion, a home invasion-y kind of thing. I don't really know. A stalker movie? You know, like Saw is not a slasher movie, but it's a horror movie. The other one with this one is Sophie Tockel is the director of it. And I was reading something online where she talked about what she wanted to make something more relevant. And in making it relevant, she completely changes the story. And this becomes a movie about rape culture and revenge and the way colleges have dealt with the sexual assault allegations and those are real issues. Don't get me wrong. But is this crappy horror movie the way to go about doing it? I mean, you want to see a movie that does it better? Wait a couple weeks and wait till Promising Young Woman comes out. And that movie nails it. That movie really works in a condemnation of rape culture and the way things go on college campuses. This one, it just seems almost thrown away and it gets really kind of weirdly goofy with the girl power scenes that are almost overly trite. And it also watching the trailer, if you actually watch the theatrical trailer, it gives almost everything away. So any sort of surprises are gone, but it's not a slasher movie. I mean, it's okay. Why not just call the movie Christmastime Sorority House Massacre? That's a better name. And then you won't have people going in going, oh, I hope it's like the first Black Christmas and having nothing about. And then on top of it, it's rated PG-13. And there's one scene in there, one of the murders in the original movie, this character's tangled up in Christmas lights. They don't even show that they clearly have an homage to that in the movie, but they don't show it because apparently that would have given them an R rating. It just, this movie kind of fails on all cylinders. It takes itself too seriously, but then not seriously enough. And it is as lowbrow of an attempt to deconstruct and cause some sort of reaction to campus rape culture than it otherwise could. It just doesn't work. It's fine for a throwaway horror movie, but I think it misses its mark on multiple levels. I'm going to have to say, the new Black Christmas kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
Also available on DVD and Blu-ray include The Godfather Coda, Possessor, Yellowstone Season 3, and the Buster Keaton Collection Volume 4. And that's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Fatale, Coming to America Part 2, and Monster Hunter. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.